And I'm not speaking out of that. I just want to see if it's in your version. Psalm 90, it has, I guess it's a verse that everybody quotes at some time, or at least we all know the truth of it. Psalm 90 says, in verse 10, the days of our years are 70, and if by reason of strength they be 80, yet is their strength, labor, and sorrow, for it is soon cut off, and we fly away. Now, I know people go past 70. Obviously, people go past 70. I always tell folks, I said, but the warranty is up after 70. Okay, it's harder to get parts after you're 70. But I'm going to talk to you about those. It's actually 70 decades. We're allotted 70 decades. And this is an observation, okay? But I broke down our life by those 70 decades. In other words, 1 to 10, going up through to 70. At 70, I expect you all to just shoot yourself because I don't have another point after that. But anyway, I give you the decades of our life, the years of a man. The first is obviously 1 to 10. And when I say I'm going to give you the decades, like what should you be aiming at during that decade? Or what's the, you know, what is the main thing that that decade should be about? And 1 to 10, it's a real easy one. Play. Kids need to play. I say that you wouldn't think you'd have to tell kids that. You know, I like football. I didn't sell my heart to it. But when I hear they're saying they're trying to get kids to play for 60 minutes, You gotta try to get a kid to play. I mean, the kids. I don't know. Do they not like play outside anymore? Because you may not know this, but you are looking at the guy that when I was just 9 years old, I sank every Japanese and German submarine that was left over from World War II. You say, how'd you do that? It was in a creek in my backyard, and I did that while I built a hydroelectric plant and fought off a few Indians. And now if you tell a kid to play outside, that means he just takes his thing out there and sits on the patio and does this. Well, I can't play outside. It hurts my screen. But kids need to play, okay? But not just that. There is a thing, you know, if anybody wants to push a political agenda, you know what they do? They enlist the kids. Save the children. I mean, I saw this thing. It was funny. They were trying to get rid of... I know what they're promoting. Oh, vegetables. And I think vegetables are great right beside the animal. And so they were interviewing these little kids, you know, because if a kid says it, I saw some place where it said a 9-year-old boy wrote a book, and they made a big deal out of that, and I thought, why would you want to read it? Have you read it? Why would I read a book? If I enjoyed that book, I'd be worried. If a 9-year-old wrote a book and I went, wow, that was really something. You have to worry about yourself if you read a 9-year-old's book. And so they had these kids, you know, and they said, do you like vegetables? Yeah, you like this? Yeah. And they had this little black kid, about 10 years old, and they said, do you like vegetables? And he said, uh-huh. And they said, what's your favorite vegetable? He said, chicken. I said, man, that's my favorite vegetable. But you know what it is? You want to enlist a child. Here's what I'm against, guys. I don't think kids should hear about politics. I don't think they should hear about global warming. I don't think they should hear about... You know, we Christians, we're watching a nation go down. Probably the kids hear too much about it. Kids just need to play. I'm not a horse person, but I know this much about horses. You take a colt, that is a child, and you put an adult's load on its back, it can't sustain that load. What happens is it becomes sway back. Not only can it not sustain that load as a youth, but now when it's a mature horse, I saw one sway back horse in my life. It was hideous. This thing looked like a U with legs. I mean, this thing went like that. You can't put anything. Now it can't, as an adult, it can't sustain a load an adult's supposed to sustain. I think that's what's happening to our people. We're putting adult loads on kids' brains that they cannot handle, and then when they grow up, they still can't handle it because they got overloaded when they were kids. I don't think, you see some pro-abortion, anti-abortion rally. There's always both sides. I'm anti-abortion. But anyway, you see this, I don't think you ought to see, here's a kind of a paradox, isn't it? A kid holding a sign saying, keep abortion legal. I'm thinking, stupid, you ran the gauntlet. But he doesn't know because he's a kid. And I don't think that kid should be there. I don't think the kid across the street should be holding one saying, stop abortion now. I think both those kids ought to be playing together, sinking a submarine, shooting an Iranian or something, okay? I mean, you know, let's shoot a Muslim. We can't, we're not allowed to do it to Indians anymore. But what I'm saying, guys, is kids need to play. Their brains aren't made to handle adult situations. And you see it. You'll see it all. How many times you see it on CNN? You know, the great terrorist organization, the great bullies, the great child abusers. And you get this kid, you know, are you worried about global warming? I'm worried about global warming. He doesn't even know what global warming is. And I think kids just need to play. If you want to put any pressure on a kid, I'll tell you what you do. Teach them how to play an instrument. That's a good time to start on an instrument. I was talking to a young pastor one time, and he had an older pastor preach for him once. And he asked this older pastor, he said, give me some pointers. And he gave him some pointers. But one of the things he told him, he said, have all of your little girls take piano lessons. And of course, this guy was a Bible believer, which means he knows we're not going to be here past this summer. And so, of course, he's known that for 25 years now. But he said, well, why would I teach him to play the piano? Because we're not going to be here long enough for him to learn. And he said, because number one, they might marry a preacher and they'll be the church pianist. Number two, they might attend a church and the only one that can play a piano, or they might end up on a mission field and be able to play the piano. And that's when the guy answered him, well, why would I do that? Because we don't have that long. We're going to be out of here in a year or two. And he told me, he said, that guy gave me that advice 25 years ago. And the thing is, he could add 25 years of piano players, all right? So if you want to put, you know, if you want to put pressure on your kid when they're young, don't tell them about global warming. Don't tell them they don't love Jesus because they're acting like a kid. They're a kid. They're carnal. That's what 1 Corinthians 3 says. They're naturally carnal. So 1 to 10, let them play. 11 to 20, one word, survive. And that is true. Those are the most deadly years of a person's life. Our teens are dying. And they're finding new ways to do it. They're not only dying at their own hands, they're doing things themselves, they're killing themselves. If you don't think that generation is the most deadly generation of anybody's life, how come every army in the world wants to be made up of them? You know, I have to laugh. I was talking with some of the brethren before church, and I said, I'm not excited at all about all the people buying guns under Obama. Oh, look, all the people buying guns. I said, why? I know if you're excited about that, I am not. Let me ask you a question. You think the people buying guns right now because Obama became president are all going to go to Washington and throw him out? No, they're going to come through your window for your food if trouble comes. That's what's going to happen, all right? And so you got that generation, and here's what I say. I heard the brother go like this. Oh, brother, they'll take my gun out of my hand. They'll take my gun out of my cold, dead hand. You know, that sounds so cool. And I said, you understand there's an 18-year-old kid in our military right now who will crawl all night through the mud just to make your hand cold and dead? And he'll bring your ear home on his belt? Guys, that is the deadliest age there is. I mean, they are self-abusive. They are self-destructive. A kid can make a decision at 13 and 14 that'll alter their life for the rest of their life. Absolutely. You know what you need that kid to do? They need to survive. You know what? I always say that if there's one word that we should try to put on that generation, it's restraint. These kids, most kids are like, they got the energy. They're ready to go. They just don't know where to go. They don't know what to do. They got all this energy. They're like running on a treadmill. And the problem is that somebody picks them up and they have them running toward, stop global warming and stop war and all the other stupid stuff they waste their lives on. But they need some restraint. They need some restraint physically. Okay? And I don't mean that in a moral sense. I mean physically. Those posters out there that you see, the guy that did those played professional football for the Dallas Cowboys. And I said, do you miss it? He said, no. He said, I think about it every day. I said, really? He said, yeah. He says, because every day I get up and I'm in pain. And guys, you know, when I was a kid, we played, our parents had us play Little League Baseball so we could have fun. I don't think any parent lets their kid play Little League ball today so the kid can have fun. It's you're grooming them to be a star so they can buy you a house someday. That's prostitution. That is selling your child, all right? And you get these kids that they have literally, they're going to be the pitcher, and they have thrown their arm out by the time they're out of their teens. And that arm is never any good. You know what they need to do? A little bit of restraint. Well, my boy's going to be a star. That's because you couldn't make it, pal. Don't live your dream through your poor kid. Don't make his body be abused because of what you couldn't accomplish, all right? They need a little bit of restraint. I played Little League ball. You ready for this? I played second base without a glove. I did. That's a tough place, isn't it? I did. When they asked me to do that, I said, I don't have a glove. They said, you don't need one. I said, really? Yeah. And they walked me out to where second base should be, and they said, lay down here. I played second base. I hate those slides. Anyway, but they need physical restraint. They need moral restraint. They really do. You know what's amazing? It doesn't amaze me because I know what the world wants of its own. It doesn't amaze me that there's absolutely no morals in children that are brought up in public school and outside of church. What amazes me is that kids in our churches and our schools have those same morals. They really do. I'm sorry, they do. You heard this, and it's not true anymore. You heard the church is just 25 years behind the world, and everything the world's doing, the church is doing 25 years later. That's gone, pal. The world, the church is now 25 minutes behind the world, and they're upset for that time lag because of Twitter and the internet and Facebook and whatever the newest thing that came out today is. Our people are on it, and they're in the same thing, and they have the same morals, and they need to be restrained. Because a child can make a decision and they're never the same again. I was a youth director. I buried a 14-year-old kid in my youth department. You know why? Because he made the mistake of taking the two wrong drugs. I walked into his hospital room. He was like this. He couldn't wipe his nose. It was running from his nose. When I walked in his room, he was running from his nose into his mouth. He couldn't do anything about it. He thought he was going to have a party. 14 years old. He never made 15. You know why? Because he was unrestrained. You know what's wrong? We got a generation out there, more than one generation, of unrestrained flesh. You told him, you know, this big. Yeah, you heard this. You heard this. Obama had the bailout and all these corporate guys that took the money and gave themselves bonuses instead of using it for their company. And everybody condemns those guys. I don't condemn those guys. I don't condemn them at all. No, were they wrong? Obviously they were wrong. Of course they were wrong. But you have to understand something. You know who those guys are? They're the guys that when they were this big were wearing the It's All About Me t-shirt. They were told from this big, you're the most important person you know. They're singing that in public school. I'm the most important person I know. They were brought up all their life believing that nobody is more important than them. So when you gave them money and they had enough to give themselves a bonus or help the company, they just practiced what they'd been preached all their lives. They needed some restraint, all right? So you need some restraint physically, morally, and spiritually. Really. It's not a lot of kids anymore that are a spiritual dynamo, but nobody needs to be taught doctrine by a 15-year-old. Some of these kids, you know, they read one book, and when they got done coloring the pictures, they decided they were a Bible teacher, and that's not where it's at. So 1 to 10 is play, 11 to 20 is survive, 21 to 30. I hate to use this phrase; it's something you hear in the world. But I picked this kid up one time, hitchhiking. And I got to come up with a better way to open a witness with a hitchhiker than if you died right now, do you know for a fact you go to heaven? That's really nuts. You know, the kid put his hand on the door handle. I sped up. I missed an opportunity. I should have looked over and went, you'll be number 12. Anyway, I picked this kid up and he goes, I said, where are you going? Where are you going? And he goes like this, just like this. He goes, anywhere, man. I'm just looking for myself. I said, well, you were back here 5 minutes ago. And from what I could see, he shouldn't look too hard because if he found himself, he wasn't going to be too happy. And yet that is what I got to tell you. From 21 to 30, find yourself. By that, I mean this. A lot of people have dreams, okay? They're going to be, teen kids. They're going to be a race car driver. They're going to be a fireman. They're going to be this. They're going to be that. And you know what some of those great heroes, when they're 18, end up being factory workers for all their life. That's not a failure. You know, very few men die. I'm talking about in a municipal or city situation. Very few men die doing what they were doing when they're 18 years old. I got a brother-in-law. And when he was 22 years old, you know what he was doing? Loading furniture trucks. You know, strong back, weak mind. That's what they needed. Open a truck, sir. And that's not what he's like at all, really. But they needed somebody to load trucks. He was loading furniture trucks. Nothing wrong with that when you're in your 20s. But he decided then he didn't want to do that all his life. So he went to electrical apprentice school and became a journeyman electrician. You know, we tend to see what a kid does out of high school and we think that's what he was. No, when I came out of high school, I was painting cars. I love painting cars. I love cars, all right? And I worked on that for about 3 years. Then I got saved, went into the ministry. But you just don't finish what you started out as. I had a young man in my youth department in his 20s. You know what he's doing? Laying carpet. He's laying carpet. You know what he's doing today? He went to two colleges at one time. They gave him the an award that you get when everybody is sure you're not going to make it. That's what they said. You can't do what you're doing. He was going to two colleges and working nights laying carpet. And today he's a doctor. He's a podiatrist with a tremendous practice in Texas. And one of the finest doctors you could ever want. I mean, a good man. What I'm saying is that in those years, he found himself. He wasn't a carpet layer. He was laying carpet, but he wasn't a carpet layer, okay? I had another friend. Of all things, he was an electrician. You know what he did? He went to college and became a plastic surgeon and took a tumor off my face just last week. Guys, when you're in that age, very few people end their life being what they were when they were in their early 20s. So guys, I never ask a 16-year-old. I never ask a 16-year-old, what do you want to do when you grow up? Because whatever they want, they're not going to do it. I know of one young man when he was a kid said, I want to be a helicopter pilot. Woof. Yeah, right. You know what he is? He's a helicopter pilot. He flies out to the rigs out in the Gulf of Mexico. He flies the workers out there. He spends a week there. He spends a week at home. And then he flies down to Louisiana, spends a week there flying guys out to the platforms. Sure, there's the exception. But the fact is that most people don't end up being what they are. Here's what happens, guys. You go, oh, I'm a failure. I wasn't an astronaut. You were never going to be an astronaut. Okay, it's okay to think that when you're 15 or 14 or whatever. Now, you guys aren't thinking that. You think you're going to be on, American Idol. Please. And so somewhere in that 21 to 30, find yourself and get some direction. 31 to 40, that's when you get established. Now, the amazing truth of that is that the establishment comes that late, what we would consider late in life. All right, here's what I used to think. A guy retires at 65, or now under Obama at 95, you'll be able to afford to. But a guy retires on what he's been saving since he was 18 years old. No. You ever seen an 18-year-old kid save money? You give an adult $1,000, and he might, first off, he's going to tithe it, right? Okay. And then he's going to, and he might say, well, this will help me. We'll buy this, the new mixer that you needed. But they're going to sock some away. You give an 18-year-old kid $1,000, and if he still got it a week later, he hasn't been rolled yet, okay? And if he says, I'm going to keep it, if the 18-year-old kid, or even the 20-something, if he says, I'm going to keep this money, within 6 months, I had to have the, Galaxy 96. Note, the one that I just call and it walks over to me. I mean, he just had to have that. They don't save money, you understand? And so, believe it or not, most people retire. Not on what they saved since they were 18 years old, or what they saved since they were 40. I have a friend and he has a financial advisor. I don't have a financial advisor. Except when Kathy says, don't buy that! But, no, she doesn't. But he said, my financial advisor, if somebody comes and says, will you give me some help financially, some advice? He asks them their age. He said if they're younger than 40, he won't even talk to them. He said if they're under 40, he won't even talk to them. And I said, why is that? And the guy said, because until they're 40, they haven't lost enough money yet. Now, if you guys are over 40, come on, man. What did you waste? Have you not wasted some money? I'm talking about the 40 and over. You guys have, you have been lied out of it, cheated out of it, or just looked like a good idea when you drew your savings out of the bank for it, right? And by the time you're 40, you go, you know something? I'm going to start putting something away. I had a preacher friend, and at 40, he had nothing in the bank, nothing. His church set up an annuity for him, and he retired 25 years later with six figures in the bank. He did that in 25 years. He didn't do that since he was 20 years old. You understand? He started 20 years after that. And the reason I'm saying this is because some of you young people, you know, you're going, well, what are we going to retire on? We don't have any money. That's because you're probably about 32 years old. But this is the time when you start getting established, okay? This is the time when you, you know, you buy a house. Hey, could I tell you something? By the time you're 30, men, get rid of the computer games. I mean, it's time to grow up, okay? You just can't get killed that many times in a day anymore. But I mean, I'm serious. You know, you say, well, I got this network I play with. Why? Grow up. I got a car. I got a 69 Chevelle, 396. I'm going to be driving it in June, and you can eat your heart out. I was talking to a 20-something kid, and he's a car kid. He likes cars. And I was telling him, he said, I heard you got a Chevelle. I said, yeah, I got a 396 Chevelle. 69. He goes, I've got a 70. Kid's in his 20s. You know what a 70 396 must cost? I said, really? He goes, yeah, you want to see it? Now, everybody has their pictures on their computer now, right? He turns his computer on and goes to a computer game where you can pick, you're going to drive a Ferrari or a BMW or a Corvette. And the car he picked is a 396 1970 Chevelle. He painted it five different colors while I sat there and looked at it. But here's the thing. He thinks he has a car. You know something, guys? Dump that stuff. There comes a time you got to grow up, all right? And when you're set, when you're 31 to 20, 40, you shouldn't be grieving that you can't buy the next computer game. You should be saying, how am I supposed to make a down payment on a house? That's what you do. All right, so get yourself financially established. That's when you. I say it this way, man. Nail your shoes to the floor. It is time to say, I'm not going to be what I dreamed to be, but I've got this ability, and it's going to take me through life. And it is time to start living life. And I got news for you: living life is not that play stuff that you see when you're 20. 41 to 50, produce. Just produce. Make yourself worth something. Okay. Let me tell you an illustration. I learned a spiritual lesson, several lessons I learned before I got saved. I didn't know at the time I was learning a spiritual lesson. And here was the spiritual lesson. 1969, I'm watching these hippies out in California burning Bank of America buildings. And this news guy interviewed a hippie that just burned down a building. Now, can I ask you a question? When you're burning buildings, why do you end up getting interviewed instead of arrested? Okay? And they asked this hippie kid, and he said, why are you burning these Bank of America buildings? He says, because we're going to build a new country, but we got to burn the old one down first. I learned a great spiritual lesson. Any hippie can burn a building. Right? Let me ask you a question. You ever seen a building a hippie built? And if you did, would you dare go in it and jump up and down on the floor? No. I learned anybody can burn a building. I'll bet you got six-year-old kids in this building right now that with a pack of matches could turn it into a smoking hulk by this time tomorrow, correct? Could they build it? No. Anybody can destroy. Don't make your life's goal who you can destroy and what you can destroy and who you can put down. It is time to produce. Build a bridge, pal, and you did something for somebody. I mean produce, all right? It is time. I call it firing for effect. It is time for your existence here. You know what I don't want to do? When I get over the other side, And the Lord says this, Gip, did you love me? You know what? You know what? When I want to prove to him that I loved him, I don't want to say, how could you question that? I split that church. I ran that preacher out of town. I got those preachers so they wouldn't fellowship anymore. And I ran that one right out of the ministry. How could you doubt my love? Look at all the wreckage behind me. Guys, that is nothing you want to brag about. But when you can say, I helped that guy cross the river. Listen, when somebody tells you, you called me when I sat at the kitchen table with a loaded gun in my hand and I wasn't going to be alive by that night and he's alive today. That's when you've done something, you understand? And so go out and help somebody. Go out and produce. Make your presence known in a good way. Come on, guys. Have we not seen that teenagers can go to the mall with a gun and make the evening news? But what can a teenager do to produce? So, in that 41 to 50, it is time to produce. Now, let me give you some advice, especially you guys that are under 50. You're not going to believe this, okay? But here's the secret of life after you're 50. After you turn 50, every night while you're asleep, your body tries to kill you. And it takes a whole day to get over that attempt. And just when you get over it, you got to go back to bed. I tell people, I said, my view of life anymore is life is a 45-degree angle, polished granite wall, and my goal today is to get a finger hold as I slide down to just slow my descent, okay? Now, I was talking to a preacher, and he says, pray for my wife, she's depressed. And I said, well, I understand. But, I said, why is she depressed? He goes, well, she's turning 40. I said, oh. I said, tell her not to worry. Because I said, she turns 40 today. I said, in just 5 years, she'll turn 50. And 2 years after that, she'll turn 60. And he went, that's not right. I said, trust me. I can guarantee, I'm telling you right now, there was only 5 years between 40 and 50. When I was 40 to 50, there was only 5 years there. And I remember when I turned 50, and then I blinked, and they said, happy birthday to, and it was 60. And so... But you need to produce. That is that decade where you need to put something out. You need to go past something and say to your kid, your grandkid, I built that. I made that. I wrote that. I did something. 51 to 60. That is time. That is the time to teach. Anything you've done for your life, you ought to know how to do it. Guys, we all know. You guys ever done anything? You know that there's a difference between getting it done and reading the book. I don't know if you ever saw it. You ever see house paint and it says guaranteed 10 years or 7 years? No, it's not. It is not. It's guaranteed 7 years if you put it on like it says on the label. Nobody puts house paint. Dip your house in boric acid. Turn it daily into the sun until it dries. I mean, nobody can prepare a house to paint the way it says. They say it's 7 years, then they got the loophole. I was painting houses inside and out when I was in Bible college. And we had bought the same paint from the same jobber, 5 gallons in a bucket, you know, and we're painting this house. And one day we're painting and you can see through it. We put on a second coat, it barely covered. So my boss called the jobber in, the salesman. And he said, hey, he said, this paint is not, there's something wrong with it. He said, it's not. And the guy says, if he said this to a 20-year-old kid, the 20-year-old kid would have went, oh, okay. But he said this to a guy that was over 50, and he said, well, are you putting it on the way the directions say? See, he was going to use his legal loophole. And my boss said, I'll tell you what we'll do. He said, we'll put 5 gallons of paint here and a roller, and you and I'll go to lunch, and we'll see if your directions got this house painted by the time we get back. And the guy looked at him and said, I'll get you new paint. Now, anybody, come on, guys. There's the way it's supposed to be done, and then there's a way that works. And I'm not talking about a shortcut where the thing breaks five months later, but if you have done something a long time, when they say, well, the book says, you don't want to do this by the book. This gets the job done, and it gets it done better, and it gets it done right. Isn't that true? Well, it's time to teach. That brother-in-law, the furniture guy, who became a journeyman electrician, you know what he's doing now? He is now teaching the electrical apprentice classes that he went to when he was in his 20s. The guy that he was listening to telling him how to be an electrician when he was a kid, he is now that guy. You know why? Because he has been doing electrical work for about 3 decades. And he knows some things, all right? So, in that 51 to 60, that is time to teach what you know. Now, 61 to 70, it's going to sound similar to the previous one, but it's not. Instruct others. And there's a difference between teaching and instructing. Teaching is, it's academic. You teach somebody, here's how you do this, here's a good way to do this, here's a way you don't want to do this, okay? But by the time you get in that last decade, that 61 to 70, you ought to have, not in teaching, you share knowledge. In instruction, you share wisdom. And there just ought to be something you've learned, not just about the product and not just about the process, but maybe about the people. Any guy at that age will say, we're not going to do that. Well, it said, you know, they said that I can tell. Yeah, I'm allowed to tell on them, and I'm going to do that. And here, and they have to do this. And you say, yeah, I know what it says, but if you do that, this job will shut down. I'm not talking about doing wrong, you understand? But you ought to have some wisdom about how to deal with people. That's what you need. So I'm going to give you these decades. I'm going to tell you, what happens if you go over 70? You're back to play. No. You know what you do? More of the same. More of the same. Yeah, just keep on going. Let me tell you about this guy. I met him back in the 80s. His name was Vern McQueen. Vern is now with the Lord. Vern got saved very late in life. But he joined the Army when he was 18 years old. And when he joined the Army, he said, I will join if you guys teach me something that I can do the rest of my life, a trade. So he joins the Army, and like any good recruiter, the Army, the recruiter said whatever he had to do to get him signed on the paper. He went in the Army, and he's, I don't know, whatever he's doing, it's not good. You know, we had a son going to Marine Corps, and he was going to go in the military. I said, son, go in the Air Force, learn how to work on planes. Get out of the Air Force, get a job working on planes. And then we had a meeting with a pastor who'd been in the Marines. And I like the Marines, okay? But he heard about Force Recon. He goes, I'm going to go Marines, and I'm going to go Force Recon. I said, John, I said, unless you're going to work for the Mafia or the CIA, there's not a big job field. So he went to Marines and worked on airplanes. Okay? So Vern goes in, and they whatever it was, it was a no-skill job, and he goes into his commanding officer. And he's about 19 or 20, he says, hey, he said, I joined the Army, and you guys said you're going to teach me something I can do the rest of my life. You're not teaching me nothing. Teach me something. And the guy goes, what can you do? He said, I can't do anything. Which, really, that's a pretty open palate, you know? Okay, this is an A. he said, can you drive? He said, no. Do you know how to drive? He said, we'll make you a driver. Now, that doesn't mean throw him a set of keys and tell him get in there and stir the gears, brother. When the Army teaches you how to drive, you go to school for it. You learn everything there is about driving everything there is, from no matter how small to how big. You learn about air pressure, tire pressures. You learn about gear ratios. You learn about double clutching and two-speed rear axles and load weights and load distribution and load securing and stopping in time. I mean, you learn everything. He said, I spent my entire Army career driving. He said, I've driven everything that they've got. He said, I've driven everything from big trucks to general staff cars. And then he retired. Then he got saved. And you know what he did? Now, he's at the age when he ought to be out there, you know, fishing. I don't know about you, buddy. Fishing. You know, to me, fishing is like a day in prison with a chance of drowning on top of that. I'm sorry. I mean, if you're a fisherman, that's good. Go twice, once for me. When I see a guy out in a boat going like this, all I can think is, I look at him, I go, I could be writing a book. This guy wants to drown a worm. When I go fishing, it's just worm murder. I apologize to the worm when I put it on the hook. It's not any worm's rights thing. I don't care if it's dying, but it's dying for nothing. But I think I figured out my problem. The next time I go fishing, I think I'm going to light the bait before I throw it in the water. But at an age when this guy should have been out fishing, know what he did? He was telling me, he said, I bought a Chevy Suburban and an old U-Haul utility trailer. And he's gone to Lebanon, Ohio, down there at the Faith Track League, where they print tracks. And he'd load up the back of that Suburban, and he'd load up that trailer. You know what he told us? He was talking, it was back in the 70s in D.C. We're at a large meeting, and he said, I can only do one thing. He said, I can't do anything. I can't do plumbing. I can't do electrical. I can't fix anything. You know, all those man skills. He was in the Army. Didn't know how to kill anybody. He'd never be a success down at the mall. And he said, you know what I can do? He said, I can drive. And he said, I'm going to do the only thing I know how to do for the Lord. And for the rest of his life, he'd go down to he said, I can live off my retirement. He'd go down there and load that trailer and load that Suburban and then take loads of tracks down into Mexico or carry them across this country and deliver them to a church. Now, he lived well beyond 70. And that was the age when, well, you know what happens? Let me tell you what happens to a man. A man wants to do something. And when he no longer has anything to do, he has the best flowers in town. He has the nicest flower beds in the neighborhood. You know why? Because a man wants to do something. I was talking to a man not long ago. He's 86 years old, Korean War veteran. And when I got done talking to him, it changed something about my life. And I told Kathy, I got about 5 books I'm working on right now, and I got ideas for way too many. And I'm a guy that I like to get things done, all right? But after I talked with that fellow for a couple of days, I told Kathy, I said, you know something, babe? I said, when the Lord comes back or I die, whichever comes first, I want to leave some books unfinished. I want to leave some projects unaccomplished. I know what you're thinking. Oh, no, you don't know. You know what happens? When a man has nothing to look forward to accomplish, when he's done everything, you know what he does? He turns around and talks about what he did. And they spend the rest of their life talking about what? That's all this poor man did. He talked about everything he did. You know why? Because he had nothing to look forward to tomorrow. I want death to surprise me when I'm writing a book. I want death to surprise me just when I got a great idea for another project. That's what I want. Because I want to die looking out there. Because as soon as you say, I'm done, I've done everything, then all you do is talk. And I'm not even being critical. But then all you do is talk about what you did. Because you have nothing. Every dawn brings nothing for you. So there's really, you know, I know, you know, you get to that age, you're not going to run as fast or go up the steps as fast. Or, you know, it's like you get up in the morning and you just go, oh, it's still there. But but keep working. Stay in the harness till you breathe your last. And I'm not telling you, you know, really, if you like to fish, go fishing. Don't make it your career. I think of Vern McQueen, and I think, you know, in those sunset years, he died without a nice big fish on his mantle. And he died without a 10-point rack in his den. But who knows who is in heaven today from Mexico? Because the guy did the only thing he knew how when he shouldn't have been doing it anymore. You understand? So I'll give you these and I'll be done. 1 to 10, let the kids play. Just let them play. Don't talk to your kids. You know what? I was talking to a 9-year-old boy. Nine-year-old boy was standing, we're talking, and his dad is talking about everything that's happening. And we're going to die. And he told this kid, he goes, you know, we're going to die. You're going to never, listen, every 9-year-old wants to hear, you're never going to grow up. You're never going to have a life. No wonder they get out of our churches as fast as they can. And this kid's 9 years old, and he goes, I just want to drive a car. You're so carnal. Yeah, he's 10, he's 9 years old. Let him play. 1 to 10, let them play. 11 to 20, hope they survive it. We have buried way too many of those. 21 to 30, find yourself. Dump the computer games and nail your shoes to the floor or at least find yourself. 31 to 40, that's you nail your new shoes to the floor. Get a house. Establish yourself financially. And give up those stupid dreams. You know what? Let me tell you the difference, because we hear this. You have to have a dream. No. You do better to have a vision. You know the difference between a visionary and a dreamer? If the visionary accomplishes what he envisioned, everybody benefits. One day a man had a vision of electric lights. One day some guys had a vision of flying people across the country. You see, when a visionary accomplishes his vision, every benefits. You know what a dreamer, when he accomplishes his dream, he's the center of attention. Some of you are dreaming about fame. You are dreaming about wealth. You are dreaming about being lauded by the masses and literally win an American Idol or whatever, Survivor, whatever stupid reality TV program that you're on. But you see the difference? And I tell people all the time, kill your stinking dream and get a vision. And you may not benefit if you come through. But 30 to 40, get established. 41 to 50, produce. Make your time here count for something. Somebody else should benefit from your time here. 51 to 60, teach what you've learned. Share the knowledge. 61 to 70 plus, instruct others. Oh, one thing. How old was David when he died? King David. 70. He was 70. And look at this verse. The days of our lives are 70, and if by reason of strength they be 80 years, yet is their strength labor and sorrow. For it is soon cut off, and we fly away. You know, I always wonder, a guy that doesn't have never gets married, tells everybody how to raise kids. So how does somebody that died at 70 write a psalm that tells you how life's going to be after 70? Look under the title Psalm 90. Does yours say who wrote it? A prayer of Moses. I think he got past 70. Right? So he knew what he's talking about, didn't he? Okay. Let's have a word of prayer and we'll take a break. Father, we thank you now for your goodness and your grace. Lord, as we come to you today, we have no problem with you because there's nothing wrong with you. We have no problem with your book because there's nothing wrong with your book. We are a mess, though. Are we not a mess? God, help us. Help these people not to corrupt their own lives. Help these young people to find where they should be and accomplish something for you. Help the dreamers to quit dreaming and start having a vision of helping somebody else instead of making themselves famous. God, help them to leave some of the childish toys behind and establish themselves and produce something for thee. In Jesus Christ's name I pray. Amen. Amen.